The following is an article by Deborah Lipstadt, professor of modern Jewish and Holocaust studies at Emory University, and the author of The Eichmann Trial, published on May 16, 2011 by the New York Times. Last week, a German court in Munich found John Dumanyuk guilty of 28,060 counts of accessory to murder, one for each of the Jews exterminated during the 6 months that he worked as a guard at the Sobibor death camp in Poland. The Dumanyuk trial will probably be the last Holocaust war crimes trial to grab the world's attention. For many, especially those in younger generations, the trial against John Dumanyuk, a 91-year-old former Ohio auto worker, now confined to a wheelchair, may seem the awkward fulfillment of the notion that history plays itself out first as a tragedy, then as a farce. Coincidentally, this year is the 50th anniversary of the trial of Adolf Eichmann, a case that, in its significance, appears to dwarf the Dumanyuk proceedings. But while Eichmann did play a larger role in the Holocaust than Mr. Dumanyuk, we must resist the conclusion that one is more significant than the other. Indeed, the Dumanyuk trial, as much as the Eichmann case, has volumes to teach us about the complex relationship between genocide and justice. The Dumanyuk case matters, above all, because there was never much doubt that he had been a vicious prison guard under the Nazis. After living for more than 30 years in the United States, he was deported to Israel in 1986, where he was tried and sentenced to death. Unfortunately, prosecutors had misidentified him as a guard at the Treblinka camp known as Ivan the Terrible, and Mr. Dumanyuk was released in 1993. What followed was 16 years of legal wrangling as Mr. Dumanyuk, now back in the United States, fought efforts to retry or deport him. Finally, Germany succeeded in extraditing him in 2009. Last week's decision, then, was proof that the rule of law works, however slowly. Of course, it's that slow pace that had many asking why Germany was bothering to try Mr. Dumanyuk in the first place. Wasn't there something comic, even shameful, about dragging a dying man across the Atlantic to stand trial for a crime he committed over half a century ago? Shouldn't there be a statute of limitations on even the most heinous crimes? No, and the trial reaffirms that society rejects that idea. Those who participate in genocide, in whatever capacity, should never rest easy, nor should they assume that if they delay justice enough, their case will be abandoned. This lesson may matter more today than ever. After all, the hunt for Holocaust killers may be over, but the hunt for those who practiced genocide in the former Yugoslavia, Rwanda, and far too many other places must continue. The Dumanyuk trial also underlines the lessons learned from Eichmann. Like Mr. Dumanyuk, Eichmann claimed that he was only a small cog in the wheel. Both men argued that they did not have the choice to say no. It was kill or be killed. However, as Hannah Arendt argued in Eichmann in Jerusalem, every machine part is of crucial importance. Removing a small cog has the same impact of removing a large one. The machine stops working. Both men could have said no with few consequences. No defense lawyer or historian has found evidence of someone being killed for refusing to participate in the Holocaust. But these men chose not to refuse. True, the outcomes for the two men will be different. Eichmann was the only person in Israel's history to be executed. Mr. Dumanyuk will probably die in his bed as his lawyers appeal his sentence. But what happened to both of these trials is more important than the ultimate fates of the guilty. Now, as then, the victims were given a chance to tell their story, not in a book, interview, or speech, but in a court of law. At the Eichmann trial, close to 100 witnesses testified about their suffering. At the Dumanyuk trial, we heard from victims' children. They joined the prosecutor in pointing their fingers at the man who facilitated their parents' murders. In other words, the Dumanyuk trial proves that while Eichmann himself may be history, the robust process that made the Holocaust trials into something more than mere court proceedings is still effective. And finally, the Dumanyuk case, by its very complexity, is a fitting coda to the Eichmann trial, because it reminds us that adjudicating genocide is, like the act itself, rarely straightforward. These cases raise difficult questions about how to punish different types of participation in a genocide. Does a guard who carried it out deserve more or less punishment than a bureaucrat who planned it? These trials do not ever truly offer closure, even decades after the crime. Indeed, cases like Dumanyuk's are, in some sense, only a beginning of a process of reckoning and understanding, a process whose burden now falls not on the courts, but on the rest of us. For further information on Dumanik's case and the proceedings before the National Court in Madrid on behalf of the Spanish victims of the Nazi regime, you can visit Equipo Niscor's documentation website, where you can find a specialized webpage on the topic. This program is an audio reproduction of Deborah Lipstadt's article Dumanik in Munich, which appeared in the New York Times on May 16, 2011. It has been produced by Radio Niscor at our studios in Belgium on May 19, 2011.